This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jake Brennan, and I want to tell you about Disgraceland, the award-winning music and true crime podcast that I host. Disgraceland tells the stories of musicians getting away with murder and behaving very badly. Fleetwood Mac, Nipsey Hussle, Cardi B, Ozzy Osbourne, Taylor Swift, Tupac, The Beatles, Amy Winehouse, Jay-Z, The Grateful Dead, and so many more. This is not the music history you've heard before. This is an uncensored, immersive look at the lives of musical icons as seen through the crimes they've committed or that have been perpetrated against them. Did Jerry Lee Lewis murder his fifth wife? What really happened to Sam Cooke in that seedy motel at 3 a.m.? And how did the Rolling Stones wind up sleeping with the First Lady? Wait, what? New episodes of Disgraceland drop every Tuesday with bonus episodes released on Mondays and Thursdays. So get in, buckle up, and join me in Disgraceland. Available right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Rock and roll.
Hi, this is Lowell Tolhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
And this is Budgie, co-founder of The Creatures, drummer with The Slits, and Susie and the Banshees.
Welcome to Curious Creatures.
Life after punk.
You may think you know the territory, but we drew the map.
Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you, me. Birthdays. Right, so this is a bit of a story, really, about the start of The Cure. Like, most people, you know, who are not working musicians don't really understand that a lot of the time musicians spend most of their sort of...
Waking hours,
special occasions, anything, either on the road or in the studio. And so I spent, for the first 5 years of The Cure, I spent my birthday most of the time in the studio. So my 21st birthday, which is, you know, quite a big one, right? Jimmy Young used to sing about it, right? Never been 21 before. You got the keys to the door. Right. So my 21st birthday, which was in 3rd of February 1980, I spent in Morgan Studios recording 17 seconds. So, I mean, it was kind of really a great birthday present for me because that was, you know, the first time we'd kind of made an album on our own terms completely.
Yeah.
So it was great. But, I mean, you know, I think somebody bought a cake. I think the studio engineer went out and bought a cake. And I think there was, like, you know, streamers and jelly and stuff. And I think there's some strange photos of me in a pink dress or something. But I couldn't be certain. Yeah. You know, then if you fast forward to different sort of holidays or occasions in the year, I was always coming back from tour on, like, Christmas Eve. It sounds kind of romantic, you know, you're on the ferry coming home for Christmas Eve, and I guess it kind of was, but you come home sort of absolutely beat, tired, and you sleep all the way through Christmas, and then Boxing Day, you might surface for a bit, you know, but everybody's going, like, why don't you come down the pub? You go, I've done that for the last, you know, 48 months. I don't really want to do it anymore, you know?
It was always a real letdown in London. I remember, you know, like when we sort of like, let's just go out. And like everywhere was booked up with office parties.
Yeah.
Everywhere, all your normal places you might go to, the club was closed, the bar was closed, or it was closed except for people that had planned and ticketed. And I was really bad at organizing things. Because when you were not organized on the road, I had no idea when holidays were.
No. No, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, London sort of over the Christmas period, especially when it goes from like the end of Boxing Day. For our American listeners, that's the day after Christmas.
When they have boxing on the television.
Yes, and lots of sports generally. But they, you know, after that, from then until New Year's Eve, pretty much everybody uses that as an excuse to, like, not open any store in the whole of the towns and or anything, you know. So you're just sort of wandering vacant, empty streets for a few days, you know.
It was sad.
Sounds very bleak, doesn't it? Sounds very bleak.
Yeah. But I suppose it is the fact that, you know, when everybody else was on holiday, or even the weekend, when they were at the weekend, thank, you know, good days, the weekend, let's all, we were working.
Yeah, all the time.
The nature of it.
You know, I don't mean to make, you know, like, oh, poor us, we had to work on all the holiday, because we signed up for that. You know, that's what we signed up for. We, you know, like, it's like joining, you know, monks in a monastery or something. That we knew what we would have to do this. But, you know, it is a, I always used to say to people, it's a fact of our life that every day is a Saturday if you're in a band. Every day is a Saturday. But it's not your Saturday, it's everybody else's Saturday, you know.
I do remember when first starting off that the weekend, you know, that's mostly when the best gigs were, you know, you didn't really want to be playing Wednesday night if you could help it.
No.
You know, no. Eric's on a midweek, it was like not a lot of things going on. It was rammed at the weekend. So if you could get like an opening slot with a visiting band, you know, be it like The Clash or Jane County or whoever it might be that weekend. The cast and characters of many weekends, many, I suppose, nights when everybody else was living it large.
Yes.
And we were like stuck in a van or stuck in a room waiting.
Well, I think the usual thing was, like you say, you know, you want to get the Fridays and the Saturday nights somewhere good because it's going to be absolute. You know, even if it's not somewhere good, if it's somewhere that doesn't have many bands, a Friday and Saturday night, you're guaranteed a full house. But, you know, the gigs you get during the week are probably in the bigger cities and you get Monday nights or Tuesday night, ain't nobody coming out to see you. You know, and you're playing to the barman. And it's like, well, why are we here doing this? But you're laying the foundation, you know. But, yeah, you know, like I said before, I don't want to sound, you know, as if it was a terrible, you know, penance we were doing. We loved every moment of it. But you have to be young to love every moment of that kind of thing, you know, because it's very exhausting.
Do you know what? Susie had birthdays a lot.
Yes.
And The Cure, it seems, were like recording on your birthday early in the year.
Yeah.
For a release in the autumn, in the fall.
Yeah, or even earlier sometimes. Yeah. I mean, because like records took, what, about three months, right? Because you finished your album and then you forgot about it. And then 3 months later, everybody's going, oh, that's really good. And you're going, what? What's really good? And so, yeah, we would do most of our stuff in the earlier part of the year. Yeah.
Sorry, you're February, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm August.
All right, so you're on the road for your birthday. Woohoo!
That's always the same. You see, it's always the bus party. I can even remember, you know, because it depends if you got a day off. If you got a day on, then, you know, everybody hopes you've forgotten about it until the gig's over.
Yeah.
But that was the time, August, September. Usually September, we'd be heading over to the States.
Yeah.
When with the Banshees, I mean.
Right.
Because that's when the colleges went back, and that's the gigs we were doing.
Right. Oh, yes, the college gigs. Simon Gallup's birthday in The Cure was he's a June. So Robert would always announce it from the stage, and then we would have, you know, an excuse to, like, oh, it's Simon's 24th birthday. We should have a party, you know, so, yeah.
Did you play any birthday songs on stage?
I think we might have done. I think a couple of times we might have sung him Happy Birthday. I can't exactly remember, you know. Some of it's lost in the mists of time.
Quite a lot sometimes. I do recall the mist clearing as I'm speaking. But as I was saying, Susie often had birthdays in the studio. And one of the first I remember was probably was the first time The Creatures appeared.
Right.
Just after we'd finished probably the writing and recording of Juju.
Yeah.
And a song called But Not Them didn't make it onto that album. Was deemed to be not part of the album somehow, even though it's written at the same time. And we decided we would go off with Mike Hedges, who I think you also worked with. I know you did.
Oh, yeah, for several albums, yeah.
So, and we were up at Playground Studios in Camden Town.
Right.
And we were there for a weekend, and I imagine it must have been the 25th, 26th, or 26th, 27th, 28th of May.
Right. Over the weekend. Yeah.
It would always be that weekend, and it was Susie's birthday. And, you know, I think we just kind of got on with the work. You had to.
So I have to ask you this question then. What did you get Sue for her birthday in the studio? What kind of little presents did you get?
Go on, now you put me on the spot now.
You could just lie. Nobody's going to know.
I can't remember.
Well, Christmas
was always the big time for presents. Birthdays, I think, was, you know, in a way, we just kind of ignored the birthday.
Ignored them, yeah. Yeah.
Really? Who wanted to get old at that point?
Well,
you know?
Yeah. And that also, I mean, I think back about my childhood. My mother, I never knew my mother's real age until she passed, because every birthday she would say, I'd say, how old are you now, Mum? And she'd go, I'm 29 and a bit, you know, and a bit obviously got bigger all the time, but I could never figure out actually how old she was. So maybe that's, you know, something the ladies don't like to discuss, you know.
No, it was a mad rush to get to something like 16. And then,
oh, God, yes, of course, yeah.
So then around about 16 in England at that time, if you knew somebody in the pub, the bar,
yeah,
you knew somebody a little bit older as well, at 16 you might just be able to get in.
Yeah.
Drinking, legal drinking age was 18, right?
Yes, it was.
Otherwise, you would have to wait a little bit longer, but I certainly didn't.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I can't actually remember the first time I went to the pub, but we did have a pub near us that didn't have... I don't think there was anybody in there, including the barman, that was over 18. You know, I don't think there was anybody in the place there. And, you know, the police would come down regularly and sort of drag people off, you know. But... it was allowed to exist. It was a different time. We're going to sound very old here, aren't we? Oh, it was a different time. Yeah, but it was, you know.
I do remember a birthday present I had made for Susie.
Oh, what was this?
A designer who I got friendly with. We were all friendly with him. His name was Colin Swift.
Yes.
If I'm getting that correct. And he had a shop on near Seven Dials in Covent Garden.
I know Seven Dials very well, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. So it was next to the other shop was, I think Stephen King may have had the shop before him. Not the author.
Not the author.
Scurry. Not The Shining. Not Christine. Not Cujo.
He would have got up in my... he's up in my estimation anyway.
He might have been. He might have been a relation or something. But Stephen King made big shirts. And if you look at my Wikipedia page, I don't know... That photograph was from California, apparently.
Right. Oh, no, the big shirt. The big blue shirt,
yeah.
Because he made those shirts. Okay.
He made that shirt, definitely. Thank you, Stephen. those were the days when we had a wardrobe lady to look after Susie's costumes.
Okay.
And so you'd throw your shirts in there as well, and they come back ironed.
Cleaned. Yes,
get them cleaned and ironed. That shirt I just put on post-gig, you can tell. Because it's not even wet under the armpits.
Right.
Anyway, coming back to the story.
Yes.
Colin said, you know, we knew it was Susie's birthday coming up. I said, well, can you make something? And we think we're going through this kind of Spanish phase.
Right.
And Susie had a few Spanish phases. You know, there was one around Boomerang and there was... Right. But he made this beautiful, he found this fabric. It was always the fabric kind of came first. And Colin was doing lots of things with roses. So it was a real dark emerald green ball gown, really.
Ooh.
Very un-Susie, but maybe pre-goth, who knows.
Yeah.
With blood red roses on a dark green emeraldy kind of thing. But multi-layered,
beautiful.
Like different, and it kind of looked a small train. Quite backless, long sleeves.
I can
sleeves.
See it already. Sounds beautiful.
Yeah. I just remember it was the first time I'd ever done anything like that. And I don't know how it went down. It was appreciated. It was appreciated.
Who wouldn't appreciate a spiffy new item of clothing? I was thinking that when you said Spanish, I was thinking it was going to be like a fierce jacket. I had one of those little jacket cut, you know, very close to your waist.
Oh, like a bolero?
Yeah, sort of thing. Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Well, we had those things. In fact, they had those the photographs that Anton Corbin took of Susie in Spain.
Yes, I've seen those pictures. They're great.
For Boomerang. Yeah. Those costumes, the jackets we're wearing, which were actually suits, would be made for the festival, the annual festival in Spain.
Because there's a connection. See, I went to Spain, to Valencia, when I was younger. And I remember seeing, you know, I stayed opposite the bullring, you know, and they have this big festival. More because they have this big festival with these huge heads. Like, they make these heads out of paper mache. Yeah, and they stick them on the back of trucks. And then they set them alight, you know, which I thought was great, you know. But I did admire the clothes. So I've always had a little bit of, you know.
Well, they were traditional tailoring, very impractical, because they seem to be made for almost theatrical in a way. But the jacket, the sleeves were longer, the cut was kind of strange because they were designed to roll up and put on the back of the horse.
Oh, okay, yes.
You know, and you could get a thicker version to act as a blanket as well. Oh. So it was like, it's a strange mix of like an old style and practicality.
Right.
I might even still have mine somewhere.
Well, I hope you're going to, you know, model them for us. I'd like to see them.
The waist maybe a little bit big.
So what about your most favourite birthday on the road? Can you remember that? I mean, I don't remember having birthdays on the road because I was always in the studio, but I do remember having Simon's birthday on the road, which was always pretty exceptional, you know.
Not really. I'm thinking that what I do remember is I had to wait a long time before I remembered it. But again, it was the creatures. We got back together as the Banshees for the 7-year itch.
Where was that you played the first time with that?
Well, we rehearsed on the East Coast, so we must have played. We were up in Woodstock. Burrsville, we were rehearsing there.
Right.
And we did like 6 dates, so hence the 7-year itch. We did 6 shows because we were aiming for Coachella, the festival.
I thought that's what I was going to say, Coachella, the festival. That's what I was remembering, yeah.
And I think it was post that tour and we went over, we got an invitation at the last minute to go over to Japan and do a couple of slots, I think, at, I'm going to say, Sun Sonic, is that what it's called? Summer Sonic? I think it is. Anyway, post that, or on the way, was it that the first time? Yes, it was. We had X-Girl opening for us. They're a Japanese trio. And their manager was a friend of Leonard Eto.
The drummer, yes.
Japanese taiko player with the troupe Kodo. And we organized a recording session in Tokyo after everybody had left to go home. Susie and I stayed behind. It was on my birthday.
Ah, good.
It was the 21st of August, and it would be 2002.
Wow.
I think it would be, yep.
20 years ago. Yeah, wow. Curious Creatures is created and presented by Vol Tolhurst and Budgie.
Producer, Joe Wong.
Producer and audio designer, Dan Didier.
Executive producer, Mark Cates.
Associate producer, Sophie Spare.
Social media, Margie Taylor.
Art and logo design, Justin Thomas Kay.
Music production, Jackknife Lee.
Curious Creatures is on the web. And you can access us at www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com.
I love saying www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com. And you can reach us on Instagram, Facebook, at Curious Creatures Official, Twitter, at Cure Creatures.
To find more of the best music podcasts, visit doubleelvis.com or follow at doubleelvis on Instagram and at doubleelvisfm on Twitter. Curious Creatures is a production of LXB LLC 2021.